Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to ESPN Radio 1300 AM on WLXG. I am Frank Lyons, and I want to wish you all a happy new year to everybody. Well, it's 2018 now. I just hope for everyone's sake that's a little better year than it was in 2017, where we had a lot of tragedies and a lot of people dying in the business, such as Penny Chenery, Beverly Lewis, Charlie Sella, Leroy Jolly, Tom Gentry, Garrett Gomez, and the great Jack Van Berg. Now I'm very pleased to be joined by my co-host today, Aqueduct track announcer and Monmouth track announcer, Frank Miramati. Frank, how are you?
I feel good, Frank. Thanks for having me on the show. And let me say that this is Aqueduct's backup track announcer to the great John Embriel.
Oh, well, you're an excellent backup, I'll tell you. And I'll tell you, Frank, I just got to say that, the other day, that eulogy that you gave at Jack Van Berg's funeral was one of a kind. It was a special occasion, wasn't it?
I appreciate you saying that, Frank. I was highly stressed out about it and deeply honored. I called it one of the biggest honors of my lifetime.
Yeah.
And, to have a man of that caliber with that much class and so many friends and so many capable people that could have done that, for him to ask me to do that on more than one occasion, he made it clear that that was something that I was to do. And as we both know, Jack very infrequently asked people for anything. He would tell you what to do.
Yeah, that's right.
May he rest in peace. What a great man. And what a beautiful tribute he ended up having that day. I was so nervous to see what it would be like for the service to make sure that everything would be handled, in a classy, top-notch manner for that man. And it exceeded my wildest dreams as far as what the family put together over there in Hot Springs. It was a beautiful tribute in every sense of the word. And that little slideshow at the end with the pictures.
That was amazing.
It was outstanding.
Yeah, and everyone was there. Could you believe the crowd that was at the funeral? Wayne Lucas was there, Billy Mott.
Neil Drysdale,
Chris McCarron, Gary Stevens.
It was big. And you know what? Jack touched a lot of lives. And I ran into a gentleman at the airport who was a good friend of Jack's, and he told me about 10 other stories. Then on the airplane, there was a young lady that worked with Jack, and she was trying to get into horse racing. And it was a really great conversation. We literally sat across from each other, and she had recognized my girlfriend and I from seeing us. And we started talking, and she started sharing some warm stories. And I was wishing she would have gotten up to the microphone as well. And the thing with her, she was a person that just wasn't meant to be working in horse racing.
Yeah.
And Jack, in vintage Jack fashion, he thought about others so often before anything else, and he told her one day, "This isn't for you," and because he knew that her potential for greatness was not going to come at the racetrack.
Sure.
And she has become a very successful person in the business world ever since, but it meant so much to me to see that she flew all the way out across the country to go and pay tribute to Jack, and we had a very, very warm conversation in Jack's memory.
And, he touched so many people's lives, and all in a positive way, and all had a great story to tell about Jack. I mean, we could have stayed there. We spent about 3 hours on people getting up, telling stories, but we could have spent a lot longer.
No question about it. Brian Lynch definitely won the award for the funniest deal. For those who obviously weren't there listening in on the show, we started with the chaplain and a young lady saying Amazing Grace. Then the chaplain talked. Then I did the eulogy. Then Nancy Holthus did a very nice tribute, which included a letter written from Mike Pewich. But Nancy's heartfelt discussion was very well received, and she was very close with Jack. And then Chris Katulak, who wrote that book, and did... You know, Chris is such a tremendous human being, and I know you're going to have a chance to talk to Chris on the show today, but what an unselfish guy he is.
Yeah.
The time he spent with Jack, Frank, just ask him what his incentive was to do that book, and your audience will love what he has to say. I won't spoil that for them. But then after that, the microphone opened for people to come up, and many people came up and told some good stories. I thought Chief was fantastic.
I love Chief
because I don't even know his name.
We just call him Chief.
I thought he was great.
Yeah, he was great.
But Brian Lynch brought the house down, and that's exactly what Jack wanted. You know, when Jack asked me to do that eulogy, my thinking was he wanted some entertainment.
Yeah.
But in the role of giving a eulogy, I wasn't going to get up there and try to start to entertain people. So I'm just glad that other people had an opportunity to tell some fun stories because, you know, in a ceremony, a memorial like that for a man like Jack, it's a perfect situation if you get some tears, which are appropriate, and then you get some laughs because that's exactly what he would have wanted. And the people who stepped up to the mic, including yourself, brought some good smiles on people's faces. Right?
Yeah. Well, let me give you a little something now. This was recorded by Maria DeVille. She was Carl DeVille's wife. And it was just a conversation that she had with Jack in the pickup truck. And she's in the passenger side and she's questioning Jack about how he buys horses and his experience about buying horses, what it is. Listen to this, Frank.
Okay, so what is it that you do in order to buy the horse? What makes your mind up?
Number one, you can't buy a car that's got a small rear end. They ain't got no push, so they got a good rear end on them. I don't like one that's got that extra length in their back. They always seem to have problems back there. But on their shoulder, a horse's shoulder is like this. There's a leg down here, and I measure from there to here. And then from here up to the top of the withers. This is the withers up here.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer you can get them two together, that's the best ride a horse will have. Ali Sheba was identical.
Really?
Yeah. But I won't buy one. If you put your hand down here, and when you go up there, your hand ends up here.
Mm-hmm. That's too short.
They're short striding.
That's amazing.
Oh, Lord.
And you followed that technique all your life?
No.
No?
I spent a lot of money learning. Slow horses.
I missed that voice.
Boy, do I ever, man. I put a tear in my eye, Frank, because, yeah. You know, it was written, and the eulogy, you know, was made easier by the fact that I just quoted so many people, and we have to give some appropriate credit to Steve Bick and his radio show for all those interviews that he held, and people like Jay Hovde and Mary Rampolini. And the way Jay touched on the way that Jack got along with horses, and you're a horseman, so you understand this relationship between man and horse. But I just loved reading and hearing about the way that he just had this incredible knack and his desire to quickly solve problems with horses.
Yeah.
And he, almost frustratingly, if someone told him about something, he'd say, "Give me that foot," and he'd get to work on the foot and just, you know, cut out an abscess. I mean, it's just, I wish I could have seen it. I never saw him. Yeah. Really at work, but I feel like I was there from the colorful stories that have been told.
Yeah, well, when I was training, Frank, when I'd have a horse that I couldn't figure out, he was off a little bit, you know, not, wouldn't be off, but, you know, there was something not quite right with that horse. I would never get a vet. No disrespect to vets. I'd go across to Shedrow and get Jack Van Berg to come over. And Jack Van Berg would have an opinion, and it would be a right opinion every time. I remember one time I got him and I was like, "Jack, there's something wrong with this horse in front." And he walked the horse down, walked him back, and walked him, had a kid on the horse, and Jack was next to me, and walked him back and turned him the other way and walked him back. And he said, "It's his knee." And I said, how do you, his knee is cold. And he said, "Well, you see, when he turns to the right, it's his right knee. When he turns to the right, when you walk him down, the way his head comes up when he turns. And when you walk him down the other way and you turn him to the left, his head doesn't come up." And sure enough, there was a tiny little problem in the knee.
Amazing. I mean, it's just, you can't teach this stuff. Obviously, he learned from his father, who was a Hall of Famer himself, Marion Van Berg.
But, that's right.
You know, for the average fan, I've been watching horses since I was a little kid and enjoying horse racing, but these types of things, I can't even comprehend how you can figure them out. But he just had that. And more importantly, he just loved to teach people.
Yeah.
He got a rush from helping someone learn something.
Yeah.
And he would get frustrated if you were with him and didn't learn.
Oh, yeah.
And he just wanted to make sure that you learned. And he was just, you know, he'd almost be, you know, it's kind of like situation when you're a kid, maybe going to math class and your parents trying to teach you the things that they know so well, and they just want to get it to you and get you to absorb it. And he had a masterful art of doing so, and his list of students is endless.
Yeah. Well, for people that didn't know Jack, when they used to be around me, they'd think that my name was Goddamn. because Jack had the most brutally, manly way, kind of a John Wayne aura about the way he used to communicate with people, but you knew he had such a soft heart. And I remembered when Bobby Frankel was training, and I came in to stand on the stand with Bobby. And Bobby, it was just me and Bobby down there, and Bobby turns to me and he says, "Hey, you know, I got all those Kenneth horses." And I'm like, "Kenneth, who's that? Who's that owner?" And he said, "I said, is that Jack's owner?" And he said, "Yeah, there's some nice horses there." And I said to Bobby, "Bobby, you won't move those horses up an inch," because I'd seen all the horses that Charlie Kenneth had with Jack, and I'd seen Jack claim some of them, and they had big ankles and knees, and he just did a masterful job. And sure enough, God love you and I respect you, Bobby, as probably the best trainer that ever lived, but you never moved a horse up an inch off of Jack.
That's the ultimate compliment for Jack, and I know he took pride. And to me, the thing that makes me happiest about Jack's whole legacy is the comeback, because people were talking a lot of trash when Jack was running long shots, and he was struggling a little bit. But to see him come back and get the support of some owners and start to rally and prove that great horsemanship is really what it's all about. You can't make a slow horse, turn into a champion. But if you're given the opportunity, you get a guy like Jack Van Berg, he's going to get the most out of the horses. And that, to me, was absolutely glorious to see him go out on a positive note.
Do you know that when he came back here, I had people say to me that Jack Van Berg is using something. And Mark DeDemonico, he trains for the man who used to own Blind Luck. And Mike Puich, who is a great mate of ours, was commenting last year. The reason that people were saying that was because on the sheets, when horses run, at 14 or 16 or 18, when Jack claimed them, he was moving them up to like an 8 on the sheets. And so people couldn't believe that there was any horsemanship that was possible, that you could do that. And they figured he had to be using something.
He was using a lifetime of skill,
experience,
and brilliance, yeah, and understanding the animals. And in fact, Jack was highly agitated with some of the people that he knew were not exactly the caliber of horsemen to suddenly come with dramatic statistics, and Jack was very vocal about that whole topic.
Yeah.
He could see a horseman very very clearly. He knew who the horsemen and horsewomen were out there, and he didn't mince words, Jack Van Berg did, but the parts that I saw of him were his side that was giving and trying to raise money and trying to do good for people and trying to help for charities, and those are the kind of things that separate people. And Jack Van Berg he was just so loved.
Yeah.
Hot Springs is not an easy place to get to. Believe me,
it was like planes, trains, and automobiles getting there.
It's a long way to get there, and I don't know anywhere that goes nonstop into Little Rock, and a lot of people showed up, and that's the kind of thing that you just smile about saying.
Yeah,
that's where you wish Jack could just get up for a minute and say hello to everybody and say thanks for coming.
I know, right? I was waiting for that to happen, because I just can't believe that the great man is gone. And but he wanted to encourage everyone to support the cause for clean racing, to protect our horses, the breed, the jockeys, and our future.
He was very passionate about that.
So he wanted to be buried. He didn't want to be buried, but he said if
none of us are getting out of here alive.
Yeah, right? No, I know, right? So he said that if at all possible, that around opening day, that I think he planned it, he would like to be buried before the opening day at Oaklawn. And Charlie Sella just passed away too. And Oaklawn got racing yesterday, and probably it's quick to become one of the best meets in the country.
I had the privilege of working there for four
seasons.
That's
right.
And let me tell you, Frank, that place had an environment, and still does, that really is second to none. And I've been to Keeneland, I've been to Saratoga, and obviously those are unbelievable meats and the greatest quality. But Oaklawn, I never felt so appreciated for my work, and I never felt love for a racetrack and for that season, which they refer to as the fifth season on the calendar.
Yeah.
And that's what that stakes race is named for, as Oaklawn Park. In fact, at the end of each day, there was a thing that was called, quote, the show. And Bobby Geiger, who was basically second in command during my tenure over there, the director of wagering and gaming, he just retired, he told me to come down and enjoy the show. And what the show was, it was like three people from management that would stand downstairs by the exit and watch the people leave.
Really?
And I had to rush down to get there, and I enjoyed that on several occasions. And it, just to watch the people, it would make you feel great about where you were and make you want to work harder and do a better job, because the on-track experience is what it's all about over there. And their purses have skyrocketed with the addition of that game room for the gaming. And it's a place that the horsemen love to go for good reason. It's not easy to win there. And when you do, it's a very, very special feeling.
Well, Chris McCarron was telling me, Chris gave me a ride from Little Rock to Hot Springs, and I'm glad I made it there. He was telling me that there was a sign going into Hot Springs, and it said population 37,700 and something.
Yep.
And that there was 60,000 people at the racetrack. And this was back in the 80s. And,
but it still happens on the big days. Arkansas Derby Day is over 60,000 to this day.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Crazy.
And it's been such a key race. I mean, the Arkansas Derby has probably become the number one prep in, well, not prep, but the number one race that Derby winners come out of in the last 20 years.
It's become a very big one, and I had my last one was calling American Pharoah in a performance that was incredible.
Well,
a memory that I'll always enjoy. You know, those are the things. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to work at a place like Oaklawn, and when we get the privilege of working in this game that we love so much, the thing about it is, it's all about Oaklawn's legacy. And so we get an opportunity, or I did in this circumstance, to just be a part of that. And my late father, may he rest in peace, who introduced me to horse racing, always told me about life is that, you know, whatever you do, they can never take away from you. And those 4 years, I will always have etched in my memory. And that I worked as hard as I could. It was the first time I was really on a big stage with really, you know, top caliber racing. And it was, you know, that's not an easy job. Look, I love these track announcers that say they love full fields. They love, believe me, I like five horse fields. I'm a track announcer too.
You've been up at Golden Gate.
Yeah, those were. Yeah. I mean, seriously, Golden Gate. Yeah. Golden Gate is probably the greatest gig in from track announcing standpoint, because it's a beautiful place. It's a booth on the roof by yourself. And let's face it, I mean, if you can call a race whatsoever, you should be able to get through those fields. They're getting better, and they're increasing their sizes quite a bit in recent times. They've got a nice man there named David Duggan, a nice Irishman who's running that place. And I'll tell you what, he's taking it very seriously, and he is committed. And he's a guy that you don't see in his office a lot. He's out there meeting the horsemen, shaking hands, and coming up with things to bring crowds out there. But that said, it's just Northern California racing is in a tough position right now. And those races are a little easier to call than those ones in Oakland when you've got fields of 12 strange horses and those well-named archibreds coming at you that you've never seen before.
By Storm and a Half.
Yes, it was exactly, right? Storm and a Half, and then Jonesboro and all that. But I love the Storm and a Half. Those were good in the
Yeah, they were very good. Stormcat line, you know, there's so much talent in the Stormcat line. Now, Frankie, you're up at Aqueduct right now, and today's weather is... it's getting a little chilly down here, I'll tell you.
Yeah, so, it's been a little rough out here. Yeah. We've had a lot of cancellations, but it's getting better, and we have a big weekend, and we had to reschedule some of the stakes, and today we have the opportunity to see the Jerome, which is a race that has a storied history, as you know. And
you were
actually educating me on the Jerome. I just knew the Jerome from the days of Distorted Humor running, but you know a lot more about the race than I do.
Well, it's the second oldest stakes race run in the country, and it is named after Leonard W. Jerome, who was the grandfather of Sir Winston Churchill. So that carries a lot of respect, and you know, it's I guess it's about, what is it, 130 something running of it?
148.
And this, that race, it was won by Fair Play back in 1908. Do you know who Fair Play was?
I've heard the name Fair Play, of course.
Well, he was the sire of Man O' War.
There you go.
And Bull Ruler won it in 1957, Fusaichi Pegasus in 2000. Richter Scale, who was a half-brother to Best Pal, won in 97, French Deputy in 95, Housebuster in 1990, and then the great Kelso won the race in 1960. But today's race, I don't really know if there's much of a Kelso in there today.
Well, there's a horse that I called breaking his maiden at first asking over at Monmouth, and that is Firenze Fire, who was a good-looking horse, and a horse that, as has been noted by others, is kind of taking Jason's service to a new level. Jason is an outstanding horseman. Look, stats don't lie. Let's face it. This guy knows what he's doing. And
you know what
this horse,
what I always respect about a trainer like Jerry Hollendorfer, he can train a $5,000 claimer and train a Grade One stakes winner. And Jason Service is in the same kind of category as Jerry Hollendorfer, because he trains cheaper horses, and then he trains a very good horse, and he trains them both spectacularly.
And I'll tell you what Jason also does is he does an extremely good job with first-time starters. And that takes a very, very special type of trainer, because to get them ready to win at first asking is no easy feat.
Yeah.
And he does that a lot for Gary and Mary West. And I have noticed over the years that Gary and Mary West have a lot of first-time starter winners, regardless of whether it's Bob Baffert or any of their other horse trainers around the country.
Mm-hmm.
They've always, it's almost as though their program is based on buying horses that are ready to win early.
Yeah.
And Jason has answered the bell for them on many occasions, and he spots his horse as well. But Firenze Fire broke his maiden, came back then, and despite me seeing him live and in person, I did ignore him in the Grade 3 Sanford, which he jogged home in at odds of 12 to 1.
Yeah, well done.
And, listen, sometimes past performances don't lie, right?
No, that's right.
And then he beat Good Magic in the Champagne.
Yeah.
And, of course, Good Magic came back
in the Breeders' Cup.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Good Magic deserves that Eclipse Award? Because I do. I don't know if you're with him or if you're with Bolt Toro, because of the wide trip. What are your thoughts on that deal?
Well, you know, you can say the wide trip and everything like that, and I do believe that it's going to be a great matchup this year between Good Magic and Bolt Toro. It's going to be the East versus the West, should they both stay sound. But as far as the Eclipse Award is concerned, I would go with maybe Good Magic, because I don't know if he is the best horse, but it doesn't really matter that Bolt Toro drew the outside and was way wide, because, you know, that doesn't say that in the stats when you look in the book in years to come. And I think that Good Magic, that was his first win, and I would maybe lean towards Good Magic. But I could see where people would say Bolt Toro and give you the reasons, because he won, I believe, was it two Grade Ones before that?
Well, right, but the thing about Good Magic is he missed by a half length in the Champagne in just his second career start. So that's the reason that I thought he deserves it. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And, of course, I'm a West Coast guy. Yeah. I'm slowly developing into an East Coast guy, but I don't think that my roots will be affected. I think when it comes down to it, I've typically leaned in the direction of, my breeding ground, Los Angeles and California. But I don't know. That's an interesting matchup. But Firenze Fire is going to be an overwhelming favorite in the Jerome, and rightfully so. And I don't see them stopping him here.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's not even another horse that has won a stakes race in the race, and this horse is a Grade One stakes winner, Grade Three stakes winner, and just has faltered in the Breeders' Cup, which we will give any horse a chance after the Breeders' Cup, because the Breeders' Cup can, that's a different type of situation, and he finds himself in a whole lot better situation today in the Jerome, and he does carry top weight, but I don't think it will matter at all. So now let's play good chalk or bad chalk, okay? Let's pick a good favorite or a bad favorite, and we will go from there, okay?
Yes, let's do that right at Aqueduct.
Because
I'll tell you, there are certain angles that people have, and sometimes you figure one that is better than others. And one angle, Frank, that I have enjoyed success with on numerous occasions is taking stands against maidens.
Yes.
It's a perfect segue, actually. It wasn't even planned. Look at us.
Yeah.
Right. Taking stands against maidens who try Steaks Company and then return to Maiden Company. They are typically overbet and offer absolutely zero value. And
I just toss
them all. I toss them all. And they're usually 4 to 5. So some of them are going to win.
Yeah.
But I believe far less than what you need to get yourself any kind of financial reward. And in the second race today at Aqueduct, Belleville Spring.
Yeah.
This horse was second in his debut at Churchill at big odds, came back, and I actually called that race when he came flying and just missed by a neck. In the New York Stallion Series race, and he finished up very nicely as well. In fact, this was a horse that arguably could have won that race, coming up just a neck short. That said, and then he finished well, so this could actually be the one that you know wins, because that was a good performance. There was nothing fluky about that effort. In fact, there was a little bit of unluckiness.
But you're saying,
the years, this horse will be 3 to 5, 4 to 5, and I'll tell you a horse that I like in here. And it's an angle from one of our former colleagues when we used to work at TVG, Mr. B, Bob Bedeker, who, of course, was bred to be an outstanding handicapper. But this is one angle of his that it's so obvious that it's not like something that, like, oh, my God, I can't believe that he came with this.
Let me tell
it's
you.
It's so true.
Let me guess. The eight horse, Connolly Beads.
No, it's like, well, you know what? That horse would actually fit the same qualification, but it's the 7, Cain Is Able.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the same reasoning, and they actually exit the same exact race.
Yeah.
It's horses that are well bet in their debut, and they don't run a jump.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they come back the next time and they run better because they just needed the experience or there was a circumstance, and both of those horses actually fit that because they exit a race on December 23rd in the slop, where they didn't really do a whole lot of anything, and the horse who won was an experienced horse with speed who just drew off flash drive.
Yeah.
But Cain Is Able, the reason I mentioned this horse over the other, the horse was 10-1 on the morning line, and everyone in the world was talking about this horse. In fact, Anthony Stabile, the big A, a very entertaining individual on Talking Horses, was talking about the number of texts he received on this horse.
Oh, really?
I love the name Cain Is Able as well.
I love it.
For those of you who know the story, of course, of the brothers, by the stallion, Friend or Foe, it's as good as it gets for Chester and Mary Broman to name this horse. And these two were foes, needless to say.
Yeah, right.
But this horse didn't run a jump. And in fact, a friend of mine came to visit me. This was a little bit before the Gravesend that afternoon, and he said to me, do we like anyone today? I said, listen, I've heard more stories from Maine to Spain on this Cain Is Able. And he was lucky because there was no window up here in the press box area, so he saved money. He goes, oh, another one of your great picks. Horse was beaten 14 lengths. I look for this horse to improve. I think that either he or the horse outside that you mentioned, Connolly's Beat, have a legitimate chance of beating Belleville Spring. And for the most part, you should stay away from maidens who then return to Maine Company. They're usually odds on, and they do not win more than half the time.
That's right. Well, I love that the rider stays aboard. Not that he would jump to anything else in the race, because obviously the horse can run because he was 3-1 in his debut. And Jimmy Jerkins doesn't often get bet in the debut. He's good with second-time starters. And let me give you three horses that got beat first time out. Secretariat.
Nice.
Arrogate.
Yes.
American Pharoah. So
you know, I had the privilege of calling Arrogate, as a matter of fact, in that race, and I saw after the race, I didn't see it in time, or I might have taken a bath that did not involve water and soap.
Right.
But Baffert sent me a text right before that race, and it said, killer here.
Oh,
just
really?
Like that. And I missed it because I turned the ringer off, and I didn't hear that, or I would have definitely had to take a dive there.
So now, there's about three favorites in today that I wouldn't give a chance to.
Okay.
In the fourth race, Tammany Giant.
Okay.
This horse has been third last time out, didn't run a jump in his first two starts against Better. Drops in for maiden 25 today, but was 29-1 last time out. Five wide and upper stretch and then hung. He was, like I said, 29-1. Now you're going to get 5-2 favorite today. That's the kind of, you know, I don't trust maidens because a horse has run three times. Now, he is getting a little better. His bars are getting better. And he doesn't have that much to beat. But I wouldn't trust the – I wouldn't throw him out, but I wouldn't single him at all. Tammany okay. Giant in the fourth race.
All right. That makes sense to me. I could certainly agree with that. But how many chances can you give him before you finally have to try to find a newer face, right?
There you go. Now, in the fifth race – My Boy Tate is the 5-2 favorite.
Yes.
I think this is a bad favorite because he is going against the horses like Celtic Chaos, or Celtic Chaos, who was fourth in the Vosburg, and a lot of horses in this race that have been right there, stakes winners. And this horse, he looks really good, but I believe that he'll pay the price today.
Yeah, even Ostrolenka on the rail is a very nice horse. He didn't run a step last time out, but on his day, he's pretty good. And he's back with his friends from the New York breeding, and he does very, very well against New York breeds.
Absolutely. Now, Polar City in the next race, 5-2. Claim from Linda Rice last time out goes against winners today. Didn't run a jump, really, in all, basically every race before that. He was second for maiden 30 at Aqueduct, going a mile in the slop. That doesn't take any kind of real racehorse to do that. And he was claimed for 20,000 last time out. Now he's in for 25,000, like I said, against winners. I believe that he's a bad favorite.
All right, so hopefully some value and some prices along the way. And then maybe we have the good favorite in Frenzy Fire. He's going to be tough to deny.
Well,
freshened up since the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Do you like anyone else in there?
No. Frenzy Fire will, if he shows up in his, if he the only thing that can beat Frenzy Fire is Frenzy Fire in the race today. And interestingly, Manny Franco gets the mount because Irado Ortiz is staying warm in Florida. And so it'll be maybe a chance to get Manny into the Derby frame. And, you know, I think he deserves it.
He's been riding well. He's a solid, solid jockey. You know, when you're winning races at Saratoga, that answers all questions. There's nothing more that needs to be asked because you're riding against the best in the world at that time of year. And he makes his presence felt. And he's doing a great job year-round. And I read... had enough of the cancellations and the snow and the freezing, and he said, you know what? You know, it's a tough thing to leave because Irad Ortiz had the opportunity to basically become like what Ramon Dominguez was during the winter here in New York.
100%.
And that's hard to leave because these purses are off the charts. Great purse money over here in New York, and he just decided, look, you know, lifestyle. And and the racing at Gulfstream is world-class, so...
Yep.
He made a decision, and I don't think he's going to be sweating out any paychecks down there either.
Yeah, right. So, Frankie, we got to go to break here now, and I'm going to say goodbye to you, okay? I know you have places to go, people to see, and I appreciate you so much. And I loved your eulogy the other day.
Thank you.
You are such a talent, and I will talk to you. You're going to come on again next week?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Okay, Frankie, you be good.
Appreciate you, my man.
Okay, I appreciate you. Take care. Now we're going to go off to break here on WLXG and 1300 ESPN Radio. I am Frank Lyons. We'll be back. American Pharoah made the headlines at the November breeding stock sales late last year, and it was no different at the recently completed Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale. Offspring of the Triple Crown champ accounted for the highest price short yearling on both day one and day two of the sale. At the opening session, prominent owners Alex and Joanne Lieblong secured a colt from Crestwood Stud for $400,000. Bred by Mountjoy Stables, he is a half-brother to graded stakes winner Smooth Air and Overdriven. The star of the show, however, was hip number 533, who sold for a cool $1 million to MV Magner of Coolmore Stud on day two. He was the highest priced short yearling of the sale and the third highest priced colt in January sale history. Bred by Windmill Farm and Petaluma Bloodstock, he is a half-brother to the brilliant Grade 1 winner Caravaggio, who is entering his first year at stud in Coolmore's Irish Base this year. As American Pharoah enters his third breeding season at Coolmore's Ashford Stud, the market has sent a clear signal that they expect big things to come when the first Pharoah babies hit the track in 2019.
Welcome
back to ESPN Radio, 1300 AM. I am Frank Lyons, your host here on Riders Up, and I'm very pleased to be joined by my old pal, Chris Katulak, the Remington Park Paddock host and the author of From Grit to Glory, the story of Jack Van Berg. How are you, Chris?
Doing well, Frankie. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
We really appreciate you coming on the show. And how's everything at Remington Park? Tell us real quick.
Well, we're kind of brown right now because the grass is dormant on the infield. Of course, we won't get to the grass racing until our thoroughbred meet begins again in August. But we've got what is considered the best quarter horse meet in the world that starts on March 9th here. We'll be April and May with the quarter horses, then take the summer off, and then get back to the long necks, the thoroughbreds, as I mentioned, in mid-August.
Huh. I just had Frank Miramati on for the last half an hour, and he was telling me that you need to ask Chris about what his inspiration was for writing the Jack Van Berg book.
Well, thank you, Frankie, and boy, I've got a tough act to follow. Following Frankie Pizza Pie there.
Yeah.
It was primarily twofold, Frank, and I know you can weigh on this yourself, but one was for awareness, and the awareness of the upbringing that Jack had with his father and Hall of Fame trainer Marion Van Berg. It was for the awareness of what Jack had accomplished on the racetrack with his racehorses, and for the awareness of what Jack has accomplished in the minds of so many people that think he is a hero.
Sure.
And then Frank, to get him back into the winner's circle, that's the other element of it, because frankly, anybody that started watching horse racing in this millennium from 2000 going forward associates Jack Van Berg with that guy that trains 30 and 40 to one shots that ran out in Southern California. And that was the case this millennium, but there's so much more beyond and before that. And of course, what has happened in the last couple of years, he did get back into the winner's circle, Frank.
I mean, that was the greatest to see him go out in glory. Like, if he had have just remained in California, and really, it was just a case that it had just gone dry, and his whole attitude was gone, wasn't it, Chris? And when he got back to the Midwest, and you could see the spark in his eye, even when he was confined to the scooter, you know, when he couldn't walk around, he used to be flying around on that scooter with a big smile on his face, and just a tremendous man.
Sure. He had to replenish himself and his racing stock when he left California, and it took him a while. He won just one race in 2013, and that's the year the book was released. But he met a guy that I refer to as the angel at 35,000 feet, and that's Jerry Caroom, who he met on a flight from California back to the Midwest.
Yeah.
And the next day, Jerry started buying horses with Jack, and he was one of the first owners that gave Jack an infusion of refreshed horses and an opportunity to get to the winner's circle. Mike Waters, Mike DiDomenico, Kay Thurman, Toby Keith, the list goes on of some people that wanted to saddle up and sidle up to JVB.
Yeah, and I have to say a thank you to Jerry Caroom for his generosity and you know, his willingness to help Jack and to help all around him. And Jerry is a good man.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, we all had a quite a day, I think, this past Monday in Hot Springs, Arkansas, with a day-long of memorial services that for some began the night before and then carried on to the evening.
Yeah.
But
and for some, they haven't stopped yet.
What an outstanding day it was, Frank.
Yeah, it was just a great day. It was a fantastic day, a day that I'll never forget. I had the honor of, and a great honor of, carrying Jack in his last journey to the grave. And you know, I wondered what they'd fed him the night before, or the few nights before,
you know, there you go with a quip, which is what you're known for, and that's what Jack Van Berg would want, would be a quip with him, about him, forever about him. And you know, a tremendous tribute I have, an honor, is Ray Pollack of the Pollack Report has asked me to write a recap of the day Monday, and it's going to come out, I think, coming up this Monday, and it will be a recap of all that happened throughout the course of the day, including what you had to say at the microphone, Frankie, when you were up there, and you know, it's very difficult to squeeze everything into the 1,500 words that he's allotted me, but I'll do my best. It was really something special.
Well, that was such a special day, and a day that I will never, ever forget. And I miss him so much, you know. I mean, like, of the people that have passed on and that I've had so much respect and care for, and but there's no one more prevalent in my mind than Jack Van Berg. And Jack got his trainer's license when he was 15 years old. So he was a trainer for 66 years, led the Arxorben racing circuit for 19 years. That's quite an achievement. Very young, entered into the Hall of Fame. You know, he used to say that in the first three Breeders' Cup Classics, he got beat a nose in each one. Then he finally won the fourth one with Ali Sheba. And we're going to talk to Chris McCarron here in a few minutes, but Jack always used to say to me, I was three noses away from being out of debt.
Yeah, and look, Chris McCarron has been such an angel for Jack. I know he's taken some heat periodically about the Belmont Park ride, and Chris will take his responsibility for that. But then he'll also say some other things that I'll just let him reveal here on your shows before too long. But the people that showed up to honor Jack, including Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, Hall of Fame trainer Neil Drysdale. It was great to see Bill Kasner there with his wife, Susie. I have to tell you, Bill Kasner told me just this morning that he has named a horse, a big strapping son of Pioneer of the Nile, Grit to Glory.
Oh,
how about that?
Oh, that's great.
So, of course, the book title is Jack from Grit to Glory, and you can only get so many characters in a name, but boy, what a tribute that is.
Sure.
And I'll enter him into my stable mail right now.
I will enter him into my stable mail right after the show.
Yeah, he says he is quite a looker and quite a mover already. So there we go.
I think that Bill Kasner has had his leg over a horse or two in his lifetime because of the way he walks.
Yeah. Well, and he worked for Jack, of course, deep in his early years as well. I mean, there's a guy that
I did not know that.
He was working on the starting gate crew in Nebraska and in New Mexico. And he put in his blood, sweat, and tear on the racetrack, and one of the first horses he claimed was I think it was from a Van Berg horse. I wrote the book. I'll have to go back
and
look at it. I think it made it to the book, or it was one of the gazillion things I had to cull out to get it into the 300-page tribute to JVB.
So can you tell us something that we didn't know about Jack?
Well, Frank, you and I know how much of a hero he was, but he was a hero to so many people beyond the racetrack, or just people that maybe had not even met him based by his demeanor, the way he presented himself on TV.
Yeah.
I've heard so many stories about him from people that have come up to me. I'll tell you one very quickly. Mm-hmm. Mike Patterson, a longtime turf rider for the Omaha World Herald in Omaha, Nebraska, told me that when Jack had a horse in for the Cornhusker Handicap at Arxorben there in Omaha, he needed to get a quote from Jack before the race, and he was looking hither, thither, and yon all over for him around the racetrack to find him. And he finally found Jack in sort of a far end of the racetrack, away from all the action. But there was plenty of action. There were all these kids that were swarming around, and he saw this bald dome of Jack's head just peering up above the kids. He approached what he saw there. Jack was sitting on a chair playing one of those arcade games where you have the claw that reaches in and grabs the stuffed animal and pulls it out. And he was pulling stuffed animals out there left, right, and center and giving them to all the kids. Now, these were kids that he didn't even know, but they were at the racetrack, and he wanted to do something nice for them while he had a horse getting ready for a $250,000 graded stakes race, the Cornhusker.
Oh, that's great.
So
wasn't Nick Nolte's character, William Smith, in the HBO series Luck, based on Jack's persona?
Exactly, yes. And Nick shadowed him for about a half a year just trying to get his mannerisms along. And anybody that's been around Jack will pick up on them. You and your buddy Brian Lynch can do a pretty good impersonation of him. But Lynchy, I like what he does. He kind of drops his shoulder and kind of drops his chin a little bit when he goes into his Van Berg impression. Boy, that just sends chills up my spine. And because that is That is Jack. Part of his demeanor was that physical impression that he gave you as well.
Well, you know, I'll tell you a quick story about Jack and Brian Lynch, that one day Brian Lynch was training for these people, and he hadn't really been doing any good for these people, and it was this horse that he thought would run well, and he told the owners that this horse will run well, he'd probably win, and so they bet on him, and the horse ran dead last. And he was down unsaddling the horse, and he came across Jack Van Berg walking back in on the track apron, and Jack put his arm around him and said, well, what's up, partner? And Lynchy said, you know, Jack, I have these owners, and I haven't been doing any good for them at all. And I told him that this horse would win, and, you know, now I got to go back up and explain to them why the horse ran bad, and I don't know what to say. And Jack said, well, I'd go with the entrapped epiglottis.
One of the 1,000,001 excuses you can have about how not to win a horse race.
To win a horse race. So, Chris, I want to thank you for coming on and telling us a little more about Jack Van Berg. And we got about 10 minutes left in the show, and we got the great Chris McCarron coming up following you.
Okay, well, thank you. And again, check the Pollock report for my recap.
I will do.
We do have Lynch's story in there, and I'll just leave you with this, Frank. What I'm going to say about you in the Pollock report reads as follows. Frank Lyons is a grade one storyteller, but the grip Jack on Frank's heart reached up and choked the Irishman and his brogue. No worries, Frankie. Your greatest tribute to your dear friend was issued 3 years ago when you named your newborn son Jack.
Oh, you made me cry too, Chris. And, you know, it keeps seem to be coming to tears with the memory of Jack Van Berg.
Thank you, Frankie.
See you, Chris. Okay, we're going to go to break here on Riders Up on ESPN Radio 1300. American Pharoah made the headlines at the November breeding stock sales late last year, and it was no different at the recently completed Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale. Offspring of the Triple Crown champ accounted for the highest price short yearling on both day one and day two of the sale. At the opening session, prominent owners Alex and Joanne Lieblong secured a colt from Crestwood Stud for $400,000. Bred by Mountjoy Stables, he is a half-brother to graded stakes winner Smooth Air and Overdriven. The star of the show, however, was hip number 533, who sold for a cool $1 million to MV Magner of Coolmore Stud on day two. He was the highest-priced short yearling of the sale and the third-highest-priced colt in January sale history. Bred by Windmill Farm and Petaluma Bloodstock, he is a half-brother to the brilliant Grade 1 winner Caravaggio, who is entering his first year at stud in Coolmore's Irish Base this year. As American Pharoah enters his third breeding season at Coolmore's Ashford Stud, the market has sent a clear signal that they expect big things to come when the first Pharoah babies hit the track in 2019. Welcome back to ESPN Radio and 1300 AM. I am Frank Lyons, your host here on Riders Up, and I'm very pleased to be joined now by maybe one of the greatest, well, I know one of the greatest riders, maybe the greatest rider that ever sat on the back of a horse in Chris McCarron. Chris, how are you?
I'm not too sure, Frank, because you just elevated me about over top of so many different riders that I could think would be the greatest of all time. But I thank you for the compliment.
Well, you know, that comes from the bottom of my heart, Chris. There's about five or six riders that I think maybe were a little bit ahead of all the other riders, and you are one. And you were aboard Ali Sheba for the great Jack Van Berg in the Kentucky Derby. And when that horse stumbled at the eighth pole, I not only bet on him, but I almost lost my lunch that day when you stumbled at the eighth pole and recovered to win. And what's your memories of that?
My memories, the most vivid memory I have, Frank, is when I was in the winner's circle up on the podium with Jim McKay of ABC.
Yeah.
For the telecast. I had no idea when it happened. It could have been as bad as it could have been had he fallen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all my adrenaline was at such a high level
that all I could think was, get up, we only have one more horse to go by. and he showing the great athlete that he was, he got up and went on and won. But when I realized afterwards and I saw the replay, there were 17 horses behind me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If, had he fallen at that point, what a terrible wreck that would have been.
Would have been.
My goodness. Not
only for the horses, but for the race itself and for the viewers and for the future viewers of the Kentucky Derby, because if it had have been known that, Chris fell and the horse fell and 17 horses jumped over him, I don't think a lot of young people would have been tuning in to the Derby after that.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
And the irony of the situation was that I had just started back riding. I broke my left femur in four places on October 16th the previous year. And so I was 6 months out of the saddle, and I happened to be walking through the barn area at Santa Anita, and Jack Vanberg was leading this really good-looking colt, and he said, "Hey, when are you going to start back riding?" And I said, "Oh, I'm on three horses on this coming Saturday." He said, "Okay, good." He said, "I want you to come by and breeze his colt for me." I looked at him. I go, "Oh, I know who that is," because he was third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile down at Hollywood Park.
Yeah,
in 1986, I guess it was.
I think it was behind Capote, right?
Yes, that's right.
And the horse called Qualify was second.
That's right, yep.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it was. I was all jacked up because I was so excited that Jack offered me the mount on the colt, and Pat Day had been riding him, but Pat chose to stick with a horse called Demon Be Gone, who ended up being the favorite in the Derby that year, but it's like so many other things in our business. It's a question of being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and to say something about the man, Jack Vanberg, he was quite an amazing person and horseman.
He certainly was. Yeah, he meant the world to me.
Yeah.
I know you were a pallbearer at his wedding. My goodness, at his funeral.
Yeah.
When I say wedding,
same thing.
Celebration of life.
Yeah.
Is what it was. And as you know, there were probably 400 people there.
Yeah.
He's so popular that they had to rent out a convention hall, a room at the Hot Springs City Convention Center. And it was a wonderful celebration of his life. And
it was a wonderful celebration.
We'll all miss him dearly. I know that you spent some time. When you were training at Hollywood Park, you spent some time chatting with Jack all the time. He'd be down there on his pony, and you were up on the clocker stand talking to Bobby Frankel and Ron McAnally and, of course, Jack Vanberg.
Yeah.
That was a heck of an education that you got, wasn't it?
That was a great education, I'll tell you. To be around those three guys that were just amazing in their own right, every one of them, and we had quite a talented group in Southern California, I should say. In those days, I mean, we could go on and on about the names that are still there and have gone. And, you know, like, I remember the day that you were beating the photo finish with Ali Sheba from Bill Shoemaker. That was quite the race.
Yes, it was. And, you know, I finished second to Shoe in two races that may have been right up there. Well, Shoe won 8,800 races, 8,833, I think it was. And of all those 8,800 winners, two of his finest rides came on Ferdinand, one in the Kentucky Derby, and I finished second to him that day on a horse called Bold Arrangement.
That's right, trained in Britain.
Yep, yep. Yep. Huh. And then the following year, I should say the following season, in the fall, I finished second to him with Ali Sheba, and he was riding Ferdinand, and he rode such a brilliant race on both of those occasions.
Yeah.
And I fell victim to his guys and his expertise.
Yeah, right. And it was probably the best race call, I think, of Tom Durkin's career. The two Derby winners hit the wire together.
Yeah, wasn't that something else?
No, something else.
I got goosebumps right now thinking about that.
Yeah, right. Well, I do too.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little story maybe about Jack Vanberg's his suspicious nature?
Yeah, Jack was he was superstitious. I don't know about
Silver. I mean superstitious. That's right. Not the wedding, not the funeral. Superstitious.
Well, he probably was suspicious in other people's minds, but as far as we were concerned.
Yeah.
But he was an outstanding horseman, as we all know, and mm-hmm. he was a great caretaker. But he was also very superstitious. And the day of the Derby, my wife, Judy, was sitting at the bottom of the escalator, which led the riders to and from the jockey's room. And a bird had found its way into this glass enclosure. And so Judy, being an animal lover, she gathered the bird up and she stuck him in a box, a cardboard box. And she asked me to go ahead and get some crackers and some water. So I got some saltine crackers and water for the bird. And after the races were over, we were back at the barn. And Judy told that story to Jack. And he says, that bird has got to be on the van. That bird's going to Pimlico with us. That's a good luck bird. We're going to take that little rascal with us to Baltimore.
Now, who did he blame in the Belmont? The bird or the horse or Chris or who?
Well, yeah, he blamed me, of course, because the bird couldn't talk back to him.
Yeah.
And I could talk back to him, but I certainly was not going to do that.
Yeah, right. Oh, he had that gruff John Wayne kind of exterior and attitude, but he was a really soft man.
Yes, he was. He had a great heart, and he was so – the thing that he excelled at was his philanthropy.
Yeah.
He always went out of his way to go to these different charity events and be the auctioneer. He was an outstanding auctioneer, and he could really get you to this is another story. I had so many stories I wanted to tell at his celebration of life.
We all choked up, didn't we?
Yeah, it was wonderful. But there were so many people in the audience. I just told the one story about when we messed up a workout, in spite of the fact that Ali Sheba was such a great horse. Jack said so many times, it doesn't matter how we train. Even a good horse can overcome both of us.
Yeah.
And that's what Ali Sheba did. But it was a great event, and I was so happy that I had the time to get back over to Hot Springs and celebrate it with him and with you guys as well.
Well, God bless you, Chris, for making it, and also God bless you for the rental car. So
I was thinking about you when I got back to the airport that afternoon. I was thinking about you. With your driver's license that had expired.
Yeah, I was literally standing in line to rent a car, and I looked down at my license, and I realized it expired 5 days earlier. And so, so the only person in the whole terminal there was this man called Chris McCarron, who was going to the same place I went. And, Jack was looking after all of us. And
that's right.
Great to talk to you, Chris, and hear your memories of Jack and your memories of the great Ali Sheba. And just one last question before you go. Of all the great horses that you've ever ridden, who is the best horse?
Well, I always say Ali Sheba was the best horse I rode, but I did get to ride Sunday Silence one time in the
Breeders' Cup
Pat Day,
Classic.
Yeah, that's right, the Breeders' Cup Classic, that's right. And Pat Day always, without hesitation, says that by far the best horse he ever rode was Easy Goer.
Yeah.
And I'm actually sitting in a restaurant here in Lexington where you've been here many times. They've got menus plastered all over the walls in here signed by famous people. And
you're at Malone's.
Yep, that's right, Malone's. And but Sunday Silence beat Easy Goer 3 out of 4 tries. So
yeah.
I don't know. Ali Sheba, I think, is the best horse I ever rode, but Sunday Silence is right there as well, and so is John Henry.
Yeah, that's true. You've had some great days in your life, and I hope you've got many more to come, Chris. And we wish you a happy new year in 2018, and we will talk to you very soon.
Okay, Frank. Hey, thanks for reaching out. I appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate you, Chris. Okay. So now that's it for another week. Everyone, have a great weekend. Good luck at the windows, and we will talk to you next week.